This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the Blonde Bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hey, good afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks so much for joining us the day after Goosebumps at the Garden Delirium in Denver. What an NBA double dip it was last night. LSU baseball back on the diamond while a huge softball game at Lamson Park and the Saints closer and closer to draft day. All these stories and much more coming your way today, Tuesday, April 23rd, the year 2024. I'm telling you what, can you find a better day than today? My goodness, the weather is just heavenly. Yeah, you know what a day it is. It's a Chamber of Commerce day here in the Deep South. Back in the Master Control Suite of the EVCO Development Studios, my trusty sidekick, James Mesh, sitting in that very important, very significant producer's chair. He's on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Get on the interstate, head west. You'll find ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles. Thrilled to be there. But if you're not in those two spots, you can still get us because we're streaming all over the world thanks to our free mobile app, ESPN SouthwestLouisiana.com. Our guests come to us via the Mike's Marine hotline at 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Oh, we began last night in venerable Madison Square Garden. Philadelphia 76ers trailing the New York Knicks 1-0. Looked like Philadelphia with a five-point lead and only 20-something seconds to go had that baby in the bag. But you must understand, in the NBA, there is no lead too big. You got to play till the final horn. And the Knicks scored 8 points in the final 27.1 seconds. Hitting back-to-back threes during a frantic finish to beat the Sixers 104-101 to take a 2-0 series lead. My buddy Mike Breen had the double bang, bang when the last three dropped. Josh Hart, remember him? Had a cup of coffee or two with the New Orleans Pelicans. He played every minute. Became the fourth player with 20 points, 15 rebounds, 4 threes, 4 steals, and 4 blocks in a playoff game, joining LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Dirk Nowitzki. If that wasn't enough, we go out to the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado, game 2 between the Nuggets of Denver and the Los Angeles Lakers. Denver up 1-0. Lakers come out great, led by 20 points in the second half. And then behind Nikola Jokic and the game-winning buzzer beater by Jamal Murray, a 15-foot step-back jumper at the buzzer with Anthony Davis's outstretched arm trying to defend, Denver beats L.A. 101-99, home court. Home serve has held throughout. Jokic only had 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. His fourth 25-20-10 playoff game. Every other player in NBA history has 4 combined. 2 from Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain, 1 each from Kareem and Dave Cowens, the Boston Celtics. LeBron James had 26 points, 8 rebounds, and 12 assists. He sounded off on the officiating following the Lakers' 10th straight loss to defending champs. He goes, "What are we doing? Why do we have a replay center?" And then he walked out of the press conference. Frustration there. No, but nobody more frustrated than the Orlando Magic, because in Cleveland, The Cavaliers beat the Magic 96-86 to take a 2-0 lead in that best of seven series. How bad has it been for Orlando? They scored a total of 169 points in two playoff games, shooting 17 for 27 from downtown. Not exactly what you want. Not exactly. More games coming up tonight. There was a bizarre ejection in Major League Baseball yesterday. Yankees manager Aaron Boone was ejected from Monday's game after home plate umpire Hunter Wendelstadt heard a yelling fan and thought it was Boone. There was a guy sitting in the front row above the dugout, kept yelling and yelling and yelling. And Aaron Boone had questioned one call at the very first batter, the first pitch of the game, and Wendelstadt had had enough. And he said, next thing coming from you, you're gone. The fan picked it up, started yelling. Boone was ejected. Never seen anything quite like that, ever, ever. The Kansas City Chiefs has extended head coach Andy Reid, general manager Brett Veach, and president Mark Donovan. Why wouldn't they? Reid's deal reportedly runs through 2029, makes him the NFL's highest paid coach. Speaking of sports, is really, I mean, we've seen what's happened with women's sports, football, I mean, now the NHL. This season set an all-time attendance record, 22.9 million fans. It was also the most watched regular season since 2015-2016, 58.6 million viewers. Wow. But them apples. Speaking of the NHL, their playoffs are running. I know we don't really talk much about it, but let's throw them a bone. Toronto beat Boston 3-2 to even their series. Carolina scored five unanswered goals to beat the Isles 5-3 and go up 2-0. Vegas beat Dallas 4-3 in game one. Edmonton beat LA 7-4 in game one as well. Big softball game today in Lafayette. Big one for both clubs. Both clubs. LSU 35-10. Seventh-ranked team in the country plays its final midweek contest of the regular season at number 19, the Raging Cajuns, who are 33-15 tonight at 6. LSU's 13-6 this season against top 25 programs after a 1-2 weekend at number 4, Tennessee. The Tigers and Cajuns meet for the second time this season. LSU defeated the Cajuns 4-2 last Tuesday at Tiger Park, and are 26-15 in the all-time series. We'll have the lady who coached at both schools and has the field named after her at Lamson Park. Yvette Girard will kind of give us the 4-1-1 on this big-time matchup. LSU ranked number 3 in the RPI. The Cajuns, a win here, boy, would certainly provide them a resume that would look favorably into the NCAA's eyes as a team that could host an NCAA regional. So very, very significant matchup. Yvette will join us at around 2:30 this afternoon. LSU's national champion gymnastics team will hold a championship parade and a ceremony tomorrow, April 24th. The parade will begin at 6:30 p.m., end with a ceremony inside the Pete Maravich Assembly Center after that. Speaking of gymnastics, Jay Clark, the head coach of the national champions, will join us here in about 5 minutes. Bob Rose will join us after that. It's time for another Black and Gold report, his final prognosis on the Saints and what they do in this NFL draft. It sure is looking like an offensive lineman for sure. Preston Guy will join us as he does each and every Tuesday in the 2 o'clock mark. We'll talk about the Tigers. Former LSU running back John Emery Jr. has entered the transfer portal today as a graduate student. We'll talk about that. And of course, Yvette Girard, as I said earlier. So fun lineup, busy lineup. And I'm looking forward to all of it. With that in mind, my producer, James Mesh, what a beautiful day it is. Did you watch the hoops last night? You're a late night guy. You must have watched some of it, if not all of it.
I did, and because it was kind of off and on, because game Magic and Cavs had already started by the time, like they were in the second quarter by the time the 76ers Knicks game started. So it was like I had to miss certain points of certain games, but I saw specifically the end with when it came to the Lakers and Nuggets and Jamal Murray. What a final couple of minutes.
From Kentucky, another one of those John Calipari recruits. I mean, they're everywhere in the NBA. Everywhere. He is so stinking good. I got my tickets, bringing my daughter Saturday to the Pels Thunder Game 3. She's so excited. She loves hoops. So looking forward to that with her. So we'll see if the Pels tomorrow can even their series and maybe become the first away team to win a game. Because so far, holding court and holding serve has been the way in these NBA playoffs. Speaking of playoffs, I do believe I heard briefly our poll question of the day. So give me an update on that thing. What is the question?
Yeah, which team down 0-2 in the NBA playoffs is in the most trouble? And of course, that predicates to the three games that we had mentioned before between the 76ers, Knicks, Magic, Cavs, and Lakers Nuggets. Since the 76ers, Magic, and Lakers are all down 0-2, which one do you think is the most in trouble? Half of the votes have gone towards LA. 27% have said the Magic, and then 23% have said Philadelphia.
Boy, that's a tough question, because I think they're all in trouble, to be quite honest with you. Now, who's in more trouble? Man, Denver's won 10 straight over the Lakers, and they just took the best shot that the Lakers could give them and erased a 20-point deficit. But Joel Embiid can't move. He can't jump. He can't go laterally. And without him, Philly's got no shot. Although he came out and declared, we're going to win the series. So I don't know. I'll have to think about it. We'll see. Tough question. Very tough question. All right, let's take our first time out, James. And when we come back, Jay Clark, the national champion coach of the LSU gymnastics squad. Another one wins a title in Tiger Town. He joins us next.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
And we are back on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday. All season long, LSU gymnastics had some purple wristbands that were worn by their coaches and their athletes, and had two words on it, get there. This past Saturday, they need to take those off and put a new one, got there. NCAA champions at long last, four times a national runner-up. They broke through on its 10th trip to the NCAA Finals to win its first gymnastics national title in the 50th season of the program. Thrilled to have the head coach of the national champions, Jay Clark, joining us. Jay, I know it's been a whirlwind. I know you're exhausted talking to everyone in the world, but we're thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for your time. And from all of us to you and your entire program, congratulations.
Thank you, Jordy. You're right, it has been crazy since we got home. It's been nonstop, but that's a good thing. You know, that's what we want. There's just so many people that have just been so awesome about congratulating us and excited about the accomplishment. And, you know, so we're just trying our best to take it in and enjoy every moment. You don't know how many of these moments you're going to get in your life, so you just do the best you can to enjoy every second of it.
Well earned. I can't believe you guys had to. We've talked about this several times. You had to close out and win the meet on the hardest apparatus there is out there, the beam. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was. You know what? Certain ones of our kids would tell you that's their favorite, but for me, it's the margin for error is so small, and it's a hard thing to do to close out a championship on that event. But if you're going to be a championship team, you've got to be able to close it out no matter where you are. And
And we had to learn that lesson a couple of times this year when we went on the road. And I think because of that, we were battle-tested and were able to do it when we had to.
I had this feeling, and I'm no soothsayer or savant or anything, but I just felt like this team had something in it. And I want to pick your brain on this. You had depth. You had experience. And you had a superstar and another one right on the verge of superstar. I thought you had everything, every piece of the puzzle was there and in place this year. What did you see in this club that led you to believe that they could accomplish what indeed they did accomplish?
Well, it was all the things that you mentioned, but more than that, it was just the wealth of integrity and character that they have. They really understand that if you do things for the right reasons and you don't make it about yourself, that great things can happen. And they were all bought into that concept and the idea that they were doing it for each other and doing it for LSU. And they never let their own personal ambition, we all have them, but they never let all that get in the way of what it was they were trying to do with and for each other. And I think as much as the physical talent and all the things that you mentioned were there, for sure, you can have that and not win a thing if your head's not in the right place. And so I'm just proud of the leadership, proud of how they stayed true to the things that we felt were sort of the cornerstones of who we wanted to be. And they were able to do that even when Oklahoma went down in semifinals and the narrative changed and suddenly we were the hunted instead of the hunter. And
that's right.
You know, they were able to block out all that noise about being the favorite to win it at that point. They just did a great job of staying true to everything we had asked them to be all year long. So it's just a testament to the character and of who they are. Yeah.
I'm curious as to what you said. Between rotations, you get a chance to huddle everybody up and say something to them. After the third rotation, after you were on the uneven bars, Utah kind of moved slightly ahead of you guys, and it came down to the beam. What do you remember? And if you don't mind sharing what you told the girls, knowing that it was now or never.
Yeah, I didn't get into – anything about the result. You know, I tried to encourage them. In my mind, I felt we had missed a little bit of an opportunity to put a little bit of distance between us and Cal. I wasn't all that concerned about, or as concerned, I should say, about Utah, because vaulting for them had been kind of an up and down thing. It wasn't their best event, and I felt like our beam, if we hit, was going to overcome that. But Cal was right on our tail, and they were going to their best event. And I felt like we had missed a little bit of an opportunity on bars to really execute and get a little more distance between us and Cal. And so I just told him, you know, I was talking through my teeth or not. I said, we're in a good place. We just need to, you know, stay in our beam bubble and go over there and knock it out of the park. You're competing for a championship. Go get your championship. It really didn't get into, you know, who was doing what and what the pending outcome would be. It was just about we're three events down. We got one more, and then we'll look up and see what happens.
And boy, they nailed it. 9.95 is the lowest. Nothing less than that on the beam. Had a tough one with Savannah, but that's okay.
Well, you know what was cool about that moment, though, Jordy? She handled that so correctly. You know, she made a mistake on a nothing skill. Everything else she did was virtually flawless, and she got off the beam, and she pounded her chest, and she threw up the L to the fans, and she went down to the corral and said, y'all pick me up. This is about us. This ain't about me. And it's just it just showed tremendous leadership in that moment, because had she made it sort of a doom and gloom sort of moment, that could have affected everybody. And in that moment, I saw Sierra Ballard grab Aaliyah Finnegan by the shoulders, and they exchanged a couple of words, and they kind of leaned in and headbutted each other. And I thought, these kids understand. They got it.
Give me some goosebumps now here, Jay Clark, the national champion head coach. I thought it was such a classy move on your part. So many program setters from the past that were there in attendance, including the lady that gave you a chance to come in. She'd been the only coach ever. And you said, we're not going to celebrate this thing until D.D. Bro gets up here on the stage. I thought the classiest of class acts I've ever seen.
Well, I told her, you know, when she retired, you know, when she brought me in here and allowed me to function as a partner alongside of her, and together we were able to take the program to the highest heights it had been, the last few years of her career. But I told her, we're going to get there, and when we win one, it'll be as much yours as it is anybody's. And I just wanted to make sure that I honored that, because, you know, she came along at a time 35 years prior to me getting here, and I was at Georgia watching a lot of the same battles be fought that she was fighting here. And, you know, I just felt like it was important to that she was there for the first one, and that she took some ownership of it, because, you know, without all those battles being won and the things that could have happened, this program could have been dropped on several occasions, and she fought tooth and nail to keep it growing. And so without all those things, and without all the alum that were sitting in the stands, and without Bob Moore, who was also in attendance and was part of those teams that we had been, you know, runner up with several years back, you know, it's about all of it. It's about the foundation that was before us. And we've got to be careful that the better we do, that we don't let a sense of entitlement creep in. We've got to always be able to look back and understand what it took to get there, and it can be taken away from us very quickly.
I tell the story all the time. Back in my day when I was playing basketball at LSU, we would go do our conditioning drills before the season in the Carl Maddox Fieldhouse. And over on the side in a little bitty corner, D.D. was coaching up gymnastics. That they had nothing. Yeah. They had no facility. They had nothing. Yeah. And to see now where the practice facility you have, the crowds that you're drawing, it wasn't a rapid rise. It was a long, steady climb. But congratulations! Right. What's after all the celebration? I hope you knocked down a cold adult beverage or something and had some fun after all of that.
Well, I did a little bit of that night, and then got home and kind of hit the ground in both in recruiting and all sorts of other business that we had to take care of here. And so I hope the next couple of days with the parade tomorrow, we'll have the parade tomorrow, I think it's 6 or 6:30. I can't remember the time. So hopefully people can get out and I'll take some time and be able to enjoy it.
Every coach does this. Every great coach tells me it's, you know, as soon as you celebrate it the next day, it's off getting ready for next year. And if you can re-recruit some of these girls and convince them to stay, if that's what they desire, with the recruits that you've already got signed up, this program's going nowhere. It's going to stay right where it is. And I don't foresee any changes coming for a long time.
Well, that's the plan. You know, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but we certainly believe that on paper we will have the horses to be right back in it again, and that's fully our intention every year, to be in the conversation. You can't always guarantee an outcome, but you can do everything you can to make sure you remain in the conversation, and that's what we're trying to do.
You know, you've forgotten more gymnastics than I'll ever know, but I've seen all the good ones, the great ones that LSU's had. Haley Bryant's the best I've ever seen.
I don't think there's any question about it. She's one of, if not the best ever in the sport, in the collegiate part of the sport. Her level of consistency and the numbers that she's had to put up over the 4 years it's incredible. She's been an iron man in terms of the numbers. We've found very few opportunities to rest her, and yet she's continued to go. It's like she's Michael Jordan and Cal Ripken. You know, it's
wow.
She's the greatest ever, but she's also the most, you know, from a longevity endurance standpoint, she's got it all. And, as far as I'm concerned, she's the best ever at this point.
That's awesome. Well, you know, with success comes opportunities, and I don't know much about it other than what I have heard and what I have read. I think there was a school that came a calling saying to see if they were could pry you and your staff away, but apparently that's not going to happen, and I hope that is the case. Tell them, well, Georgia Bulldogs, stay away. We're just going to beat you on the four apparatuses and keep on winning. So congratulations to you, your staff, your athletes. We couldn't be prouder for you. What a season. What a weekend. Man, go enjoy every minute of it, Jay, and thank you for your time.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me, and just for clarity, our staff is staying put. So we're here again. So we're not going anywhere. We love being here, and we love being together, and that was my priority. I wanted to keep this thing going. So,
well, just between you and me, I hope LSU opens up the pocketbook a little bit and rewards you guys. That's all I'm going to say. As well, they should. Jay Clark, thank you, buddy.
I'm not sure it's between me and you anymore.
Congratulations. Enjoy the parade tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Jordy. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, buddy. Jay Clark, monumental. That's awesome. And they've got some studs coming in, and they got some people staying around. I'm telling you, they'll be back. They will be back. We'll be back after this timeout. We shift gears, talking Saints, talking NFL draft with my buddy Bob Rose. It's the weekly edition of the Black and Gold Report next.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We are back as the NFL draft 2 days away in Detroit. How do you like those commercials with Eminem and the commish? Anyway, it's Tuesday. It's time for the Black and Gold Report. And our good friend from the Saints News Network, Mr. Bob Rose, joins us. Robert, good afternoon, sir. Have you gotten any sleep? You okay?
Good afternoon, Jordy. No, my sleep level is dangerously low and will continue to be low at least through this weekend. As you know, our Bayou Blitz, we do a 3-day draft-a-thon, live show on all 3 days. And then, of course, us at the Saints News Network, all the profiles and mock drafts that we've done leading up to now. Then we have post-draft analysis. So I'm hoping my family will get to see me about a week from today.
Okay. I hope so as well. How do you see this first round? Do you see a lot of trading ups and trading downs and wheeling and dealing going on? What do you see?
Yeah, I do see quite a bit of movement, going on in the top 10. Top three teams, I believe, are going to stand pat at the end of the day. Chicago, Washington, New England, they all need quarterbacks in the worst way. So I think it's safe to say the quarterbacks are going to go with those top three slots. The spots I'm watching are Arizona at 4, the Chargers at 5, and maybe even Atlanta at 8, because you have teams like Minnesota at 11, who hold two first-round picks. Our friend Sean Payton with the Denver Broncos sitting at 12, and the Vegas Raiders sitting at 13. They all need quarterbacks, too. So I think my prediction is at least two of those four teams are going to be able to move up in the top 7 range to get one of those other quarterbacks. I would be surprised if it didn't happen, and I think ultimately probably 5 quarterbacks go within the top 10.
Wow. I saw where the Jets parted ways with Zach Wilson and sent him to Denver. Why would Sean Payton want Zach Wilson? Sean Payton's so confident in his ability. Does he think he can squeeze some juice out of Zach Wilson? Does that alter their process at all?
Absolutely. I mean, Sean, and I love him, and I love him for this, but Sean has one of the biggest egos in the world. And he believes, as most offensive coaches do, that he can fix whatever is wrong with Zach Wilson at the quarterback position. And you figure Denver really didn't have to give up anything to get him. They swapped late round picks. I don't remember whether it's in this year or next year's draft, but that was really it. So you're giving up essentially a 6th round pick to get a very young Zach Wilson, with Sean Payton very confident in his abilities that, he can fix what ails him, as the saying goes. Does that alter Denver's draft strategy? as big as Mr. Payton's ego is, I don't think it does. Sean is highly egotistical, but he's not stupid. He can't believe that Zach Wilson is going to fix the quarterback woes in Denver. I mean, he just can't. If he is, or if he does believe that, then the air is a little bit too thin in the Rocky Mountains.
Who knows the discussions between ownership, general manager, and head coach at Denver? How many years does Sean Payton have on his contract, and what's his buyout? I mean, they must have a plan, and they may be in total tank mode for the following season to move up. They may stockpile draft picks. Who knows, right? That's the unknown of this NFL draft year after year.
Yeah, it really is. And
let me interrupt. In the division that Denver is in, a rookie quarterback's not going to get them to the top of that division. Not this year.
No, and that's really something to consider. Now, we know that when Sean Payton falls in love with a prospect at any position, he's going to move heaven and earth to try to go get him. But even Sean last year sort of hinted at this kind of thing, or not last year, but the year before when he was still with Fox as an analyst. He talked about being a little bit worried, that the NFL is headed towards certain teams and specific positions tanking for specifically a quarterback the following year. Now Denver is in that unique position, and you're right. Even if they held the number one overall pick, Caleb Williams, Drake May, whoever you like at quarterback, none of them are good enough to fix everything that's going wrong in Denver. So if the Broncos don't move up, and I would then start to believe, tanking's probably too strong a word. Sean's way too competitive for that. But he certainly has the job security in Denver to build this thing the way he wants it to be built. And like you said, Sean Payton is always a man with a plan. He doesn't do things just to do them. He's always trying to think two and three moves ahead. It wouldn't surprise me if Sean Payton has his eye on fixing and patching other holes with young players, and maybe hitting the reset button at quarterback until he has a chance to maybe get one next year with a accidentally on purpose top five finish.
And maybe at 12, Saints at 14, maybe there's a way to move up and get rid of one of those fifth round draft picks or something like that, or something down the road. You never know with the relationship Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton have. You never know. Mickey Loomis today said, when asked about Marshawn Lattimore, do you expect him to be a Saint next year? He said, yes. Should we buy into that?
Yeah, I think we should. And you and I have discussed it several times this offseason. With the way Marshawn Lattimore's contract is structured, if the Saints move him on draft night or shortly thereafter, they wouldn't get anything in return for the 2024 season, because they wouldn't be able to officially move on from Lattimore until after June 1st. So, even if you have a trade set in motion and agreed to in principle, it wouldn't become official till after June 1st. Therefore, whatever compensation you get, likely draft picks, wouldn't come until the 2025 season. Well, Dennis Allen and those other coaches on the staff, nobody has said it, but you have to believe that their seat is at least extremely warm and that they need to win now. And nobody on God's green earth can look me in the face and say with an ounce of sanity that the New Orleans Saints are a better team without Marshawn Lattimore than they are with him. Simply put, the Saints are closer to a winning product with Marshawn Lattimore in uniform than without.
I'm with you 100%. So with the 14th pick in the first round, according to Bob Rose in his mock draft, the New Orleans Saints will select whom?
Well, it's an offensive tackle. I know I'm cheating when I say that, because everybody knows what the needs are. If you need me to spit out a name, I am going to go a little bit out on a ledge here and say Talese Fuaga, the tackle from Oregon State. I think Fuaga, Fashanu from Penn State, and Joe Alt from Notre Dame, those are the top three tackles. And as deep as this position is in this draft, there is a noticeable drop off after those three. So I'm a little bit worried that Fuaga won't even be there at 14. And if that's the case, that's why I went out on a limb, by saying his name. If that's the case, then the Saints are going to have to decide between, do you want J.C. Latham? Do you want Troy Fatanu from Washington? Do you take a chance on potential with Amarius Mims from Georgia? That would be the decision facing the Saints, but I'm saying in a hopeful manner, that the Saints pick Fuaga, and my hopes that he'll still be on the board at 14.
All right, at 14. Are the Saints standing pat in the second round at number 45? They make a, do they try to package that with one of the four fifth-round picks that they have to try to move up a little further? But if they stand pat, who would Bob Rose like the Saints to pick at 45 in a perfect world?
I would love to have Jalen Polk, the wide receiver from Washington, on the team. But I think the Saints go defense here and, go with either the best defensive tackle or the best safety on the board. I love Jaden Hicks from Washington State. I don't think Tyler Newbin from Minnesota will be there. If he is, I think the Saints run his name to the podium. The Saints have had really, really good fortune drafting safeties in any round, throughout recent history. And I believe that they'll ultimately go safety here. If you need me to throw out a name, let's go Jaden Hicks from Washington State. If it's defensive tackle, they want power at this spot. So maybe a Chris Jenkins from Michigan. So let's flip my mental coin. I'll go Jaden Hicks, safety from Washington State.
All right. So offensive line, safety. Then what happens in your opinion? Because then you have the 150th overall pick in the fifth round, the 168th, the 170th, and the 175th, the latter three coming via the compensatory picks. Then they have a pick 190 in round six, 199 in round six, 239 in round seven. So, I mean, what are the chances? The Saints have done pretty well in the past with later round picks, but my goodness, for a team that needs to strike gold, I can't fathom them sitting back and not being in the third or fourth round at all. I can't fathom that scenario. Can you?
No, I can't picture it either, Jordy. And that's one of the reasons why I personally have not published any mock drafts, because it's next to impossible to mock trades. And I have said from the very beginning, that the Saints are not going to come out of this draft without choosing in the third or fourth round. And that's usually the sweet spot for Mickey Loomis to make trades, especially in recent years. And I also believe that the strength of this draft, generally speaking, lies between rounds two and four. So there's no way the Saints are going to go between 50 and 150 without making a pick. I believe that they'll move most, perhaps even all of those picks. To get a selection or two late in the third, early in the fourth is probably the best you can hope for, with the resources available to them. And even don't be surprised if they throw in a 2025 mid-round pick. But I certainly believe that this, if the Saints are going to trade, this is where we're going to see the activity between rounds three or early into round four.
Back to the offensive line. I've seen him play. He's a big guy. He comes from a great school. Has had really good offensive linemen. J.C. Latham from Alabama. What's your draft rate ranking of him?
I like Latham a lot, and I've said it before. I truly believe that there are seven, maybe even eight offensive tackles that could potentially be day one starters, and I put Latham right in that conversation. As I said before, I think that there is a noticeable drop off after you get past Alt, Fashanu, and Fuaga. But that next tier, I put Latham, Amarius Mims, Troy Fatanu, and maybe even slide Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton in there. I like Latham a lot. He's played a couple positions along the offensive line, and he's done it for an SEC power, as you put it. Week in and week out, he is being challenged not only in practice by his own teammates, but in game action too. Latham projects for a right tackle, which of course is where Ryan Ramczyk plays, but he's played a little bit of left tackle too. I think that versatility, I would rate Latham. I'm a big Amarius Mims fan. I would put Latham at five, right behind Alfashanu Fuaga. I would put Mims there based off of potential. And then I'd go Latham slightly over Fatanu.
Okay. All right. We shall see. All right. You got a lot of stuff to do. Go say hello to your family. Take a break. Go do dad duties and keep grinding. But we'll be watching on the Saints News Network and following you throughout the course. We'll talk next week and get your draft grades for the New Orleans Saints, because the hay will be in the barn by that time. But Bob Rose, thank you so much. The Black and Gold Report rolls on. Thank you, my friend.
Can't wait to do it. See you soon, Jordy.
All right, buddy. Take care. We'll take a timeout. We'll wrap up hour number one. Set the stage for hour number two next.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
All right, we are back. Haley Van Lint still undecided on a transfer, despite reports saying she committed to TCU. She said, whoa, I'm not going there. I checked out a bunch of places and haven't made a decision yet. Okay, well, good luck to you, Haley Van Lith. Still to come, Preston Guy will join us. John Emery has entered the transfer portal, and as expected, LSU losing some players, and offensive lineman Joe Cryer has entered the transfer portal. So we'll get the very latest on that. So some are leaving. Most important question is who's coming back? So we'll talk to Preston Guy about all of that. And a huge softball game tonight between the Tigers and the Cajuns in Lafayette at Lamson Park. So we'll get an update from the lady who was very successful at both programs. Yvette Girard will join us, and she'll give us her thoughts on a very pivotal matchup, not only for today, but for postseason play for both ball clubs. So we'll talk about that. James Mesh, what a night it was in the NBA. My goodness gracious. Buzzer beaters in Madison Square Garden, even more so in Denver, Colorado. Home teams have won throughout the course of this thing. A bunch of teams with a 2-0 advantage. Three more games tonight. Pelicans play on Wednesday. Let's give an update on our poll question, sir.
Yep, and still leading the way at 50% of the votes is the Los Angeles Lakers as the team that is in the most trouble. 27% have said the Magic, and 23% have said the 76ers. To me, it's got to be easily the Magic.
They can't score.
Exactly. You can't score, and you've been going against a Cavs team who is good, but they've been having bad performances at home. So it was like you had opportunities like the Pelicans had in OKC on Sunday. You had opportunities, but you've been poor on offense, and just they have too many young guys that haven't had playoff experience.
Yeah. Brian Kelly's going to do the media circuit tomorrow at the NFL draft. He's going to hit all the major things. He's going to be there to support Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and the rest. Those are the three that are going to be there. And then not a bad time. He's going to tee it up Tuesday in the celebrity shootout at the Zurich Classic. He'll be up there along with Blake Groupie and Pete Werner for the Children's Hospital Celebrity Shootout at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. It's a shame we won't see the hottest golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, but he's going to sit out. He deserves a rest. But we won't rest because hour number two is straight ahead. The Jordy Helfrich Show, ESPN, 1037 Lafayette, ESPN, 1041 Lake Charles. Your home for the LSU Tigers and those Houston Astros.
This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
That's right. Can you dig it?
It's time for 2 hours of the best sports talk on the airwaves.
Can you dig it?
The Jordy Holtberg Show with your host, the blonde bomber himself.
Can you dig it?
Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go on this Tuesday, April 23rd, the year 2024. Hope you had a great start to your day. We're thrilled that you're with us. One more hour to go. After the best doubleheader of NBA playoffs I've seen, both right down to the wire, both exciting, both controversial, both great players stepping up at the right time to make big time plays. It was awesome. We certainly enjoyed our conversation in hour number one with Jay Clark, the national championship winning coach of the LSU gymnastics program. They'll have a parade celebrating their victory, their season tomorrow with a parade at 6:30 and inside Pete's Palace for a celebration beginning roughly around 7 p.m. My main man, James Mesh, in the producer's chair inside the EBCO Development Studios. He's on the campus of Delta Media, where you'll find ESPN 103.7 Lafayette. Head west, you'll find ESPN 104.1 in Lake Charles. Thrilled to be there. If you're not listening on those two, you can listen to us anywhere in the world because we are streaming live and in living color thanks to our free mobile app, ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com. Our guests come to us via the Mike's Marine hotline at 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. That's where we go right now with our good friend from TigerBait.com. Our Tuesday wish list is fulfilled because we have Preston Guy with us yet again today. Preston, good afternoon, buddy. What's going on with you?
Hey, Jordy, what's up, man? Man, you got me wanting to talk about any sport but football today, but I guess we'll talk some portal today.
We'll talk a little bit of portal. How about John Emery hitting the portal as a graduate transfer? How about that?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think most LSU fans aren't really recognizing as him on the LSU roster. You know, he said right. He was going to try to go to the NFL draft. I guess he's making a backup plan, kind of like LeBron James Jr. did, where if he doesn't sign with a team, which is at this point probable, just if we're being very honest. He has about 1,000 yards in his, goodness, how long is his career? 5-year career. He has about 1,000 yards, never really cracked a lineup. This makes a lot of sense for him, but he was in no way going to be on LSU's roster next year. We already knew that.
Exactly.
And it's not really a loss. Now, Joseph Cryer, on the other hand, that is a guy who they lost, and probably a guy, I think of the guys that they lost in the portal recently, I think most of them were guys who weren't cutting it, you know, guys who were leaving because they needed to find somewhere else to get their time on the field. I think Cryer is a young guy who you know, hadn't even taken a snap yet, hadn't even fully enrolled yet, and he's leaving a little premature, I think.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what goes into the minds of athletes? Maybe they get homesick, or I don't know, but there you go. There you go with that. So those are some people that are exiting. Let's talk about some people who might be coming in. They got the big guy from the defensive lineman from Michigan State. I still think he's in town. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that his visit is going very well, as you can expect. Bo Davis has that reputation as a recruiter, so you would expect it. I haven't heard of him planning any other visits yet, although it's not to say he won't. It's just there is not news out there yet of where he's planning on visit after. I also am hearing that he doesn't want to play around with this. He wants to make a decision and be done. That might sound a little odd considering this is, I believe, his fourth time in the portal. And all three other times he decided to return to Michigan State. But this time it appears, you know, there's no nonsense. And he's going to be picking somewhere. They're also getting C.J. West, the defensive tackle out of Kent State. They're really high on. They think he's an NFL player. TCU defensive tackle Dominic Williams is another guy they're bringing in soon. They're not playing around at defensive tackle.
Is that the only what about after the spring game with so many receivers running for, and I know we talked about this and I don't put any stock into spring games, but I saw where some highly rated cornerback just entered the portal. Is LSU going to kick the tires on a cornerback possibly?
Here's the deal. I think in this portal class, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago, and LSU was at 86 scholarships, right? And it's like, well, if they want to bring guys in, they got to kick guys out. Well, they're down to 81 right now with the guys who have been entering the portal. And I think that these are guys where they're, you know, having conversations with and saying, like, look, man, we don't think it's going to work out. We recommend X, Y, and Z for you. And they're making room because they want to take more than I was expecting. I was thinking they might take two defensive tackles. I think they're looking for more because now they have four open spots as of now. You know, there's other pieces of news that haven't, you know, quite hit. I'm not sure. I'm sure they might get down to 79 is what I'm hearing. I'm thinking and they might get there naturally. You know, attrition is part of your program. You know, people leave for whatever reason. Things happen, you
Absolutely.
Know. Guys get hurt and can't come back. But I'm hearing they might want three or four defensive tackles. They're not playing around there. Maybe a running back, and this is more me speculating, not anybody who's told me this, but a running back, but highly based on Trey Holly's status. Might even look at a punter and a corner, but here's the deal on cornerback. They have a ton of corners. They have so many corners, they just sent one packing. You know, Jeremiah Hughes went packing, I should say. You know, he entered the portal. I don't know who decided that or whatever, but obviously he didn't like his outlook to get on the field, and he went packing. They're not looking for bodies. They're looking for a high-quality corner, and right now, it's mom. I'm not hearing that LSU coaches have found the guy they want yet or not. So it's real quiet. So that's kind of where my eyes are going to with this spring portal.
I would be surprised if LSU doesn't lose another wide receiver. They got so many of them. They can only play so few. I know they lost Preen. Looks like he's going to go to Tulane. I'm surprised they're keeping all the other ones. I'm not sure yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Preen is a guy that, he was going to be buried. You saw, you know, he had a touchdown late in that game, and you're seeing he was the guy who was getting buried. I'll say this, 5 years ago, looking at this roster, I don't see any guys who are obvious names to transfer out, because typically when you're transferring out is when younger guys are starting to pass you up. And you're talking about you might sit around and never see the field because of that. Well, in this day and age of transfer portal, it tends to be, what can you do for me right now? So any one of those guys who's not a starter really could be a suspect. Think about a guy like Shelton Sampson, who has a ton of talent, but he's not quite developed there yet. Thinking about him, but we'll see. I haven't heard anything from any of those guys actually doing anything yet.
Who knows. I still, you know, we talk about quarterbacks and backup quarterbacks, and look who Texas has with Ewers and Arch Manning, and LSU's got a really good starter in Nussmeier. I think any team, you know, other than Texas and Georgia and Alabama might want to have him, and maybe Missouri might want to have him as a starter. But we got to determine who the backup is. And I know that's kind of up for grabs as well. Where do you think that ends up?
I think it's Ricky Collins. And based off what I saw in the spring game, I don't think it's as close as we were talking throughout spring. I think it's Ricky Collins by, you know, one step ahead, you know what I mean? But a full step, you know, I was not very impressed with A.J. Swan's accuracy or his athleticism. I think he's a serviceable quarterback, but I think Ricky Collins has more talent, and he's only going to get better. And I think the time he spent in LSU system, I think that shows. He looked a little more comfortable. Now, they're both not close to Garrett Nussmeier. I mean, it is night and day when Garrett Nussmeier walks off the field, but yeah. I think it's Ricky Collins, and I think that, in my opinion, this isn't from coaches or nothing, but I think that gap will only get wider and wider because Ricky Collins, he has a stronger arm, he has better legs, you know, and he's younger. I think that he'll advance faster than Swan.
Did you see enough of the early enrollee freshman quarterback to see that maybe there's some potential there as well?
Oh, man, he had a really good throw to Kai Preen. He is crisp for a 17-year-old. I mean, real crisp and physically developed. This kid likes to do squats and power lift. He is for a true freshman. He's clean. I don't know if he'll battle for the backup quarterback battle quite yet, because it's just a position that requires such a learning curve. But there's a lot of people expecting that Bryce Underwood is just going to come to LSU's campus after Garrett Nussmeier leaves and just be the starter day one.
Right.
And I think that Colin Hurley is going to have something to say about that.
Okay. Interesting. So after all is said and done, and you've looked at the tapes and you've watched and you've analyzed and all that, and given it's a spring game and given that it's vanilla and given that you're not playing everybody, but how do you foresee LSU? What do you see this team? How do you see them evolving?
Yeah, I mean, based off what I've seen so far, I mean, this is an 8-4, 9-3 football team. It's so long. We're so far away, though. I'm really interested to see what they do in this portal window. It's going to be very important because they didn't have any defensive tackles for that spring game. You know, and I think about what happens when a team just rolls up and runs all over you all day long and you get no pressure on the quarterback. That's going to be problematic for this team. So I think if they pull in some of the names we're talking about, you're all of a sudden increasing that win total by quite a bit. The other thing is the defensive backs weren't up for the challenge. They were all out of line. They're running, two guys are running cover three and one's running a cover two, you know. And they were just, this defense just needs to improve dramatically before I think that this is a championship team. But that being said, isn't that the point of investing in these defensive coaches and getting to the portal is to make that improvement? I'll say this, the schedule seems to be more manageable than we thought it was at the end of the year, with USC having their problems and UCLA having a new coach and having to overhaul their team. I mean, if anything, maybe the win total increases because Saban retiring. I mean, that's no small nugget either. If anything, maybe the win total increases because your schedule got more manageable than you expected it to be. But this defense needs some work, Jordy. I'm not saying they won't get there, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Interesting. We know Jaden Daniels is going to be the first LSU Tiger drafted on Thursday. Malik Nabers will be the second Tiger drafted. Brian Thomas will be the third. Who's going to be the fourth?
Oh, boy. That's a really good question because it's a drop-off. It's a drop-off, and I don't have, like, a spreadsheet with all their names in front of me, so I'm just going off the top of my head. But it's kind of a toss-up between Mason Smith and Makai Wingo. And I would probably say Makai Wingo in the third round.
Okay.
I hope I'm not forgetting somebody, Jordy. I might sound real stupid here.
No, I don't think you are. I don't think you are. I think Brian Thomas got hit with a Mike Tyson right to his jaw when both of those guys went and declared for the NFL draft. I don't believe for one second he thought both of them would leave.
You talking about the defensive tackles? Yeah.
Smith and Wingo. I think Brian Kelly
Jefferson.
Said, yeah, I think we're going to keep one of them at least, and that's going to help us, but when they all left, I think he was like, whoa, what just happened?
You know, the story is on Mason Smith is they were working to keep him. And Pete Jenkins, who was on staff as an assistant but not the defensive line coach, he had a good feeling that Bo Davis was going to be the coach and that would be good enough to get him to come back because Mason Smith, he's really upset about his defensive line coaching since he committed to play for Ed Orgeron. You know, a defensive line guru. And they were able to hang on to him through the coaching change, but he was expecting elite coaching when he got here, and it never happened. LSU really let him down in a big way in that respect. And Pete said, I have a feeling, but I can't promise you. Well, he went to the draft, and then the very next day, LSU hires Bo Davis. And by that point, the decision had been made. So, yeah, I think not having a defensive line coach, I think if they had one in place earlier, I think you're keeping at least one of those guys, if not two.
All right. Well, John Cryer, the big story of the day, the LSU true freshman offensive lineman entering the transfer portal. Who knows why, who knows what, but it is what it is, and we move on from there. So we will keep following you to see what happens with this portal, because a lot of the normal amount is heading out, but we haven't seen anybody heading in yet, so let's see what happens. But you think maybe four or five instead of and maybe two or three defensive linemen. I agree with you.
Yeah, maybe even four. Maybe even four defensive tackles. We'll see. They're not playing around. They're taking it very seriously. And I think that this all of a sudden, with all these guys exiting, I think it goes from a pretty mundane spring window to a pretty exciting one.
He is Preston Guy. He works with TigerBait.com, and he does a tremendous job, and we're thrilled to have him each and every Tuesday. Preston, thank you, buddy. Enjoy this weather, and we'll keep following you, man. Thank you.
Have a great Tuesday.
You got it, buddy. That's Preston Guy, TigerBait.com. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more here on this Tuesday, April 23rd. I can't believe it's the 23rd day of April already. It's flying by. Here, after this timeout.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
All right, welcome back. The Department of Justice announced today that it will pay nearly $139 million to the survivors of Larry Nassar's sexual abuse as part of a settlement stemming from the FBI's mishandling of the initial allegations. 139 victims. So that's working out to roughly $1 million per claimant on average. And this, of course, Olympic champions Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, Ali Raisman, among more than 100 victims who filed claims with the Department of Justice in 2022 after that they found that the FBI officials in Indianapolis failed to respond to allegations of abuse they received involving Nassar with the utmost seriousness and urgency in 2015, a delay that allowed the abuse to continue. Of course, Nassar, the former U.S. Women's National Gymnastics team doctor and Michigan State employee, was found to have sexually assaulted more than 500 women and girls under the guise of providing medical treatment. He's now serving what will amount to a lifetime prison sentence on sexual assault and child pornography charges. This settlement brings the combined liability payouts in legal cases brought by the victims of Nassar's abuse to more than $1 billion. Michigan State agreed to distribute $500 million to survivors, while USA Gymnastics reached a separate settlement with them worth $380 million. Terrible, unbelievably terrible situation across the board. Caitlin Clark is on the cusp of setting another record. The number one pick in the WNBA draft will continue her association with Nike by signing a $28 million contract that spans 8 years and includes a signature shoe. Good for her. Good for her. The more, the merrier. I think that's awesome. Awesome. The new deal would be the richest sponsorship contract for a women's basketball player by far. All the shoe companies were after her. She decided to go with Nike, who came up with the most Doremi. She earned about $3 million in NIL money at Iowa with deals she had with State Farm, Gatorade, and others. So the woman who averaged 32 points a game led the Hawkeyes to a second straight national championship game. Drafted number one by the Indiana Fever on April 15th, she'll earn $76,000 as a rookie. Men play 82 games, the women play 41. but she's got some bonuses added into that, and she has a chance to make a bunch. So we'll see. I think she should be on the U.S. roster for the Olympics in Paris this year. She's got a chance, if she stays healthy, to play in Los Angeles in 2028 and in Brisbane, Australia in 2032. So there you go. The NFL's investigation into alleged tampering by the Atlanta Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles remains ongoing and will not be concluded this week, the league said Tuesday. So, in other words, if they found some tampering going on, they could take some draft picks away. But those selections will not come from this week's draft. The Eagles and Falcons each have 8 picks in this 2024 draft. The Falcons are being investigated for allegedly being in direct contact with Kirk Cousins, formerly of the Vikings, before they were legally allowed to, according to league rules. So Cousins ended up signing with the Falcons, a 4-year contract worth up to $180 million on the first day of official free agency last month. So the Eagles are being investigated for their alleged tampering regarding their signing of Saquon Barkley, who previously played for the New York Giants. So we'll see what happens when the NFL concludes and comes up with their decisions for that. But certainly, they will suffer the consequences. Speaking of that, all the rumors, the Raiders are tempted to trade up to number 2 overall with the Washington Commanders. They love them some Jaden Daniels. They love him. So we'll see. They have Aiden O'Connell on the roster. They also signed Gardner Minshew in free agency, but they need a quarterback. They need to make a splash in Sin City. They love Jaden Daniels, but they may not have the chance to move up because Washington may love Jaden Daniels as well. So stay tuned for that. All right, those are just a little nuggets here and there. What's it like to have a field named after you that happens to be the focal point of the softball universe, as Yvette Girard, who coached at then what was then Southwestern Louisiana from 1981 to 2000, and then to go to LSU from 2001 to 2011. The park, Lamson Park, rededicated back in 2019. It's now known as Yvette Girard Field at Lamson Park. We'll talk to Yvette when we return about that and about tonight's huge matchup on the field named after her as the Tigers and the Cajuns battle in softball with a lot on the line. We'll have that conversation next.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana's sports station on YouTube.
Welcome back, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, there's a big softball game between two really, really good clubs. And our next guest knows all about it because she coached both of them during her Hall of Fame career. And looking up things, it's kind of amazing. She won 75% of her games as the head coach of then Southwestern Louisiana. She won 75% of her games as the head coach at LSU. She's been to 5 College World Series. She's won everything you could ever imagine. She's in Hall of Fames, the National Fast Pitch Coaches Association Hall of Fame, Louisiana Softball Coaches Association Hall of Fame, and quite the honor on March 15th, 2019, at the softball game between the Raging Cajuns and the Troy Trojans. Lamson Park was rededicated to Yvette Girard. The park is now known as Yvette Gerard Field at Lamson Park, site of where the Tigers and the Cajuns will battle it out tonight. Yvette is kind enough to join us. Great to see. We're so thrilled to have you. How are you, dear? How have you been?
I am great. We haven't visited in a while, but I'm all good. How
I
about
know.
You?
Sometimes you're out there fishing and doing fun stuff, and you forget to look at your phone at the text messages I send you. But that's okay. That's okay. I love you. What's it like when you are you doing the game on television tonight? I bet you are.
I am. I'm getting ready to leave Baton Rouge here in a few minutes because you never know what you're going to get on night 10.
There you go. Be good. Good luck across that basin, and good luck on that. I hope it's clear sailing. It's a beautiful day for you to travel. It'll be a beautiful night for a softball game. When you sit down and put the headset on and you look out there and you see it, what's it mean to you? What's it like? Very few people have a field named after them on the collegiate level, but you do.
Yeah, it always makes, you know, my answer to that is like, I think I'm supposed to be dead if they're naming things after me.
No, they got Skip Bertman Field. He's still alive. It just means you won a lot of games and you did a lot of good.
Yeah, and it's still mind-boggling to me that, you know, when I look out, it's funny. We can be doing the broadcast, and I'll say the field. I won't say the Yvette Gerard Field. And I can hear my buddy in my ear saying, you can say your name. You can say your name. So, anyway, it's surreal to call a game there and see your name all over the field.
That's awesome. Well, you deserve it. I heard you were a better volleyball player back in the day than a softball player. Is that true?
Well, that's all. The only sport we had in high school was volleyball.
Okay.
And I wasn't crazy about it, but because it was the only sport, I played it. And then I played it at then USL, and there was no scholarships. We just walked on. So
yeah.
I didn't start playing softball until I was 18, and it was slow pitch. I never played fast pitch in my life.
I'll be darned. You'd have to get that, you know, you'd have to get that hat with purple on one side and, you know, the red on the other side, right? You did so well at both.
Yep. But, you know, I've learned now. I'm just Switzerland in this duel because I can't win for losing.
That's right. Well, let's talk about this game tonight. It's, you know, LSU's 7th ranked. The Cajuns are 19th ranked. Really good teams. Cajuns did the unthinkable. They beat Oklahoma, the team that nobody's supposed to beat. LSU's been great. The SEC's tough. They're struggling, but they're maintaining there. But this is a pretty significant game for both teams, isn't it?
I agree. You know, LSU's been a little – both teams have been up and down at different stages of the year. The Cajuns mm-hmm. are really on fire right now. You know, the Tigers are up and down, but they're still very good. And, of course, you know, the Cajuns are very hard to beat at home. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to calling this game tonight.
Cajuns are 17-3 at home. They remain atop the Sun Belt Conference standings after a sweep of Southern Miss. LSU won the game last week 4-2. I don't know if you saw the game or what were your thoughts about that one?
Oh, I was at the game. It wasn't televised, but anyway, I was at the game. You know, the Cajuns, bam, they started off the first inning with a home run, and they were up 2-0. But the Tigers came back and prevailed a 4-2 game in Baton Rouge. But they're very evenly matched, and, you know, whoever makes the least mistakes, I think, is going to win the game.
Okay. Both teams well-coached, both teams super competitive. Has the game of softball changed? I always see those where the girl has the bat in her hand and she's running and she kind of slaps it down. Has this become more of a long ball sport now?
Oh, it absolutely has changed. Everything was funny that I'll use this word, but offensive. You know, that's been the steady climb towards more scoring, more offense for softball, and it's been achieved. The strike zone is so much smaller than it was, and you just don't see pitchers getting 10 strikeouts in a night anymore. And I think a lot of it to me, in my opinion, it's the strike zone that has just changed things dramatically offensively.
Okay. In that 4-2 win last Tuesday in Baton Rouge, Sydney Berzon had a complete game.
Yes.
What do you see in her? Is she another in the long line of some of the good pictures that LSU's had in their history?
Yeah, she's unquestionably their ace, their number one. She's very good at what she does. She's got many weapons, but she can go up and she can go down. She can change speed. She can change planes. But she's young, and I think she might lose some focus every now and then when she gets hits and gives up runs. But when she's on, she's really, really good. Same thing for the Cajuns, Sam Landry. Sam Landry is as good a pitcher as you'll see. I'm, you know, if you're asking me, she's going to get 10 strikeouts tonight. I don't think so, because those days are kind of gone right now.
I gotcha. Coach Glasgow says, I think we have to approach this game from a standpoint to go all in, all out, and maybe roll the dice a little more. In softball, what does roll the dice a little more mean?
Well, I don't know how he could roll the dice anymore, because that man takes more gambles and runs on the bases than just about anybody I know. He changes his lineups during games. He changes it constantly from game to game, and there's no stop sign in the Cajun repertoire at third base coaching. It's just go, go, go. So I don't see him doing too much different than what he does already. He's very aggressive.
Gotcha. Beth Tarina picked up she's been around a while. She's got 527 wins at LSU this past Saturday. What's her style? You say Glasgow takes lots of chances and rolls the dice. What's the Beth Tarina style of coaching?
Well, she's a lot of hands-on. I mean, she's the head coach. She's at third, and she's calling pitches. So she's got her, you know, except for the hitting part of it, she's got her hands in everything. She's very calm, cool, collected, knows the game. And, you know, I don't want to end this interview without mentioning that she is the all-time winningest coach in softball, LSU softball history. She passed me up the other day, and she's, you know, in the elite company of Skip Bertman and a couple other people that have won over 500 games at LSU.
Well, you won 526, dear. 75% winning percentage. And overall, 1,285 wins, 421 losses, and one tie. I bet you remember the tie.
Tennessee. They had to catch a plane. Of course I remember it.
That's crazy. That's crazy. What was your... this may be an unfair question, but I got to do it. I think maybe your 2001 team, went your first year at LSU, they went 59-11, 26-4 in the SEC. You were first in the West, and you got to the College World Series. Was that your best team ever?
That was a pretty good team, but the 1993 Lady Cajun team that went to the World Series for the first time in Cajun history was a really good team also. I always say that the best player I ever coached was Kyla Hall. She was our pitcher, hit four hole for us. She probably could have played shortstop when she wasn't pitching. Her bat never came out of the lineup, but we went to the World Series with 13 Lady Cajuns, and we came out third that year also, so I would say the 93 team for the Cajuns, and you're right, that 2001 with LSU, and the 2004 team was pretty salty too.
Yeah, 57-12, you got to the World Series there. Maybe a really good team that didn't get to the World Series and broke up you would have gone four straight times to the World Series with the Cajuns, except in 94 you went 57-5. And didn't come out of the region. That had to be a heartbreaker. What a team.
Heartbreaker. We lost to Utah in Lafayette. They beat us twice on Championship Sunday. And I will tell you, there were a lot of tears, including mine, after that after that series, we just got upset. We had a young lady that came in from Utah and just shut us down. We couldn't hit her. And Allison Habits was on that team. And but, yeah, it was a heartbreaker. And there was a bunch of others that were also misses, just so close. And, you know, Skip Bertman has said it always perfectly also. You can't just be good. You have to have some luck also. So a couple of times we just weren't lucky.
Well, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 consecutive trips to the NCAA tournament from 2006 to 2011 at LSU. You've been terrific throughout the course of all of it. Always so kind to us. For people that don't know, what occupies Yvette now that she's retired? I know you do some television work, and are terrific at that. But what else bides your time?
I love to fish. I can't believe that I actually stayed in Baton Rouge because I was such a Cajun girl. But I found I'm living where I just love where I live. And, you know, I still do so much work with LSU. I do some with the Cajuns. But I called over 30-something softball games here this year. So, and I was doing volleyball also. But when Fran Flory retired from volleyball, I said, please give it to her. She knows what she's talking about. I'm just filling time here. So I like to travel, and, really? You know, I don't know. I stay busy.
I have to ask you this question. Did you give a call to D.D. Bro after the national championship in gymnastics?
I texted her immediately. I texted her immediately
she's doing?
And congratulated her.
Yeah. Amazing, huh? Absolutely amazing. So,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I got to LSU when we were giving away free tickets at Winn-Dixie, so to go to games and matches. So I understand Jay deserves all the credit in the world, but let's not forget who got that practice facility built so that he could recruit the fabulous athletes he has now.
Yes, yes, and look who helped get that stadium built. Tiger Park, that now Beth Tarina is enjoying the fruits of. So there's a lot of groundwork done. We're not going to forget you, Yvette Girard, but have fun tonight. The team that makes the fewest mistakes. Team that makes the fewest mistakes, you said, is the team that wins it. So we'll see. A very important game for tournament seedings and possible hosting of regionals is on the line tonight.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, go have fun.
All right,
you and Dan McDonald,
good
I guess.
To talk to you.
You got it, girl. Thank you, Yvette. I appreciate it. Safe travels.
Okay.
That's Yvette Girard at Lamson Park. Yvette Girard Field at Lamson Park, 6 p.m. Tigers and the Cajuns softball. Should be a great, great game. We'll take our final timeout of the day. We'll come back and finish our poll question, do a little on this day in sports history and anything else we can think of between now and then. Stay with us.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
All right, we are back to wrap things up tonight. 6:30 first pitch, Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field. It'll be the Nichols Colonels coming in at 27-14, taking on LSU, who are 25-16, fresh off a series win over Missouri. Jake Johnson said, we're playing the best team, Nichols, that we will see on a Tuesday this season. We have great respect for them. It feels like it's almost the same team that was an NCAA tournament team last season. This will be a real strong challenge for our team. LSU has been really good outside of conference play with a 20-3 record. So trying to develop some consistency, trying to maintain some confidence as they get ready for a homestand with Auburn this weekend. LSU will play 12 of its final 15 regular season games at the Box. So a lot of home games coming up. Special thanks to our guest today, Jay Clark, the national champion gymnastics coach, Bob Rose on the Saints draft, Preston Guy on the transfer portal with LSU, and Yvette Girard previewing tonight's big matchup between LSU and the Cajuns at Yvette Girard Field at Lamson Park. Some NBA games on tap tonight. They can't possibly be as good as what we saw last night, but we'll watch either way. The Pels have to wait to play their game two of their series with Oklahoma City, and that'll be on Wednesday. Speaking of which, Grant Hughes will join us on Wednesday to preview that and the rest of the NBA series. Michael Huguenin will join us, as he does each and every Wednesday, and much, much more along the lines. James Mesh, whole result. Dealing with the NBA playoffs, please.
Yep, and which team down 0-2 currently in the NBA playoffs is in the most trouble? 50% went with the Lakers, and then 25% apiece towards the 76ers and the Magic. We did get a couple of comments. JBK said, the Lakers were in trouble when it was 0-0. The King is old. Ton had said, I'm saying 76ers. They were picked to sweep, weren't they? John Paul said, I just like to say the Lakers are in trouble being from California and Los Angeles. They're in trouble. They're going to have trouble trying to get home. And then Darren had said, if the 76ers blow this, Embiid might want out.
I respect everyone's opinion, but whoever said the King is old, have you watched him play? Have you watched him? He's doing things defy age. He's blocking shots. He's doing everything. LeBron James is tremendous. He may be numbers-wise old, but he ain't through by any stretch of the imagination in any way, shape, or form. He has been absolutely tremendous. Thank you all for your votes on that one. It was on this day in sports history. Let's see. 1989, the Dallas Cowboys drafted UCLA quarterback Troy Aikman with the number one pick in the 1989 NFL draft. 2 months after Jerry Jones bought the team, they didn't win a game. I think they won one game that year, but then they got pretty good. But what a draft it was. Four of the top five picks in that 1989 draft ended up in the Hall of Fame. At number one, Troy Aikman. At number three, Barry Sanders. At number four, Derek Thomas. What a linebacker. At number five, Deion Sanders. The big question, well, who was number two? That was Tony Mandarich, who's considered one of the biggest draft busts ever, the big offensive lineman out of Michigan State. But what a draft that was. All right, there you go. James Mesh, another one in the books. Thank you, sir. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Do everything you can to stay healthy. Be kind to one another by all means. It's a gorgeous day. Enjoy it. Be happy. AFR is next. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.